Blog Talk Radio.
Bringing voices to power. Grassroots mouthpiece.
It's the rap. Hip hop. The rap.
They can't stop us. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. Sundays 5 to 7. The Child Support Hustle is real. You can catch the Child Support Hustle show Saturdays from 5 to 7 with co-hosts Drew D and Kenya R. The Child Support Hustle is real. Bringing voices to power. Catch me on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Let your voice be heard on HuntsvilleBlack.com. Don't miss the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, Tuesdays from 8 to 10, bringing voices to power. Bringing voices to power.
All right, in this episode of the Grassroots Mouthpiece, I welcome back Robert Avery Sr. of Gadsden, Alabama, to talk about some of the most pressing issues facing our communities and our state. Robert Avery gives our listeners insights to the political atmosphere in and around Gadsden, Alabama, as well as statewide and nationally. Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing great. How are you doing this morning?
Yeah, man. I'm doing pretty good. Just taking in everything that's going on. Like we talked previously before the show, this Senate race, man, isn't it getting crazy? I know I see all the craziness on there and twists and turns on the Republican.
You know, it's I don't know. It's the alligators in the swamp are eating the alligators now, so. I think they call themselves trying to drain the swamp and create another problem there.
Yeah, but it seems like when you're dealing with Republicans, though, in Alabama, when you start to drain the swamp, when you drain one swamp monster, 10 more come in.
that's a good analogy of it. That's exactly what's happening here in Alabama. I can't believe. Well, yes, I can too. The way they're eating up each other, particularly, you know, when they were supposed to be so big buddies, when it came down to Strange, and then it came down to Mo Brooks and a few others. I felt like they would get together and say, "We're just going to run one person," but it's obviously it's not about helping the people; it's about helping themselves. Otherwise, you know, that's why we got this little fight we got going.
Oh yeah, they definitely gonna eat each other because they cutthroat. You know, they cutthroat.
Oh yes.
Look at all this Siegelman stuff that happened on him. All that's coming to light, and we see exactly how cutthroat they are right here in this instance. But I can't get over how in the world did the Alabama Democratic Party candidates for that Senate seat let somebody like Mo Brooks get to the left of them on medical marijuana? I mean, 26 states already have it legal in some form, and these Democrats let Mo Brooks get to the left of him. I was hearing some Democrats who really care about this issue, who have friends and family suffering from so many ailments, especially disorder, why we always go into war with people. They was talking about voting for Mo Brooks, but you know, I'm glad like you said, he ain't gonna make it. He look like he ain't gonna make it. But those people, but it's just interesting that some Democrats were talking about voting for Mo Brooks because the Senate candidates we got, they all hush mouth. They're scared to talk about it.
Well, you know, that's one of the issues there. You're right that he did get far left of a lot of Democrats. But I think the problem with Mo is the fact that Strange and his group is just killing him when it comes down to Mo's base. So I think that's the problem. But it was interesting. I was going down through southeast Alabama the other day, and I saw no Mo Brooks signs, no Luther Strange signs. All I saw was Judge Roy Moore. And you know, all of a sudden, I think he's now started doing some advertising on TV. But prior to that, I heard nothing or saw nothing. Or didn't even, you know, if you didn't know he was running, you didn't know he was running. But if you go down through Roanoke and going down through that area, going down towards Opelika and stuff, all you see is Roy Moore signs. So it's going to be a very interesting race, I think.
Yeah, and to a lot of people, that's going to be a bad sign right there. I think Luther Strange is the type of guy. Oh yeah, man, you don't want these religious people like that in no high office. I'm sorry. So a lot of them are very good people, but the experiences that I've seen with religious people, I don't care what thing they got behind their name. When I see them high up in office, it's just always a bad sign.
Well,
you know, anytime you got a man thinking God is telling him to act a certain way, a lot of times that certain way he's acting is going to line dead up with his intentions anyway.
Well, you know, my grandfather, who was a Baptist minister, when I was real young, back in the 50s, so I used to hear him say, if you see a white man with a Bible in his hand, he's do watching. And I'm saying, you know, what do you mean? He's got a Bible in his hand. I mean, and you're a preacher. And you know, now I understand, as man said that the song go, when, now that I'm a grown-up man, now I understand. And you know, I learned early on back when Jimmy Carter was running. It really came to light. Here you had Jimmy Carter, who was an ordained Baptist deacon in the Southern mm-hmm. Baptist Church. You had Ronald Reagan, who was a devout atheist until he got ready to run for public office. And you had all the big boys, Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and Oral Roberts and all these other guys out there supporting Ronald Reagan over Jimmy Carter. And that finally hit me as to what my grandfather was talking about. And then you talk about the Ku Klux Klan, who also hid behind the Bible. So I understand now that I'm a grown up man exactly what he was talking about.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, and I say this, you know, like I said, I see some good in some religion that they, you know, be preaching. You know, I see it all in the Bible. I see examples of it. But I tell people that it wasn't when they converted black people, they did not have our souls in mind. And that's a fact, because they didn't believe we had souls. They didn't believe a black person could go to heaven. So you just got to think about that. Your oppressor is not going to give you anything to empower you. Why would he empower you when his whole nature and history up to this point, unless something drastically changes, has been to oppress you? But going back to this race, I think that it looks like what's his name? I think Roger's probably going to get this one on the Democratic side, but I didn't want to get in it too much, you know, because I felt disgusted with the Democrat Senate. You know, some of them are talking a good game, but like I said, we're going to have to see. We're going to have to see. I wish somebody like Roger Bedford would run. You know, at least we had balanced budgets and stuff when he was down there. I don't know nothing about the man personally, but I know he kept those budgets balanced down there, and we wasn't in such a squeeze.
Well, I know Roger personally. Roger was what you call a level-headed, level-thinking individual who cared about what was right as opposed to what was expedient. He got some bad raps, but Roger took care of his people. And that's what you want, whether they, you know, and when I say his people, I'm talking about the people in his district.
Yeah.
And that's what you do.
If everybody did that, everything would work out.
Everything would work out.
But if you got legislators going to Montgomery saying that, hey, I got the answer for all of Alabama, then that's when you got problems. Every one of them going down there and got that in their head, not their people. They thinking about how they want to change the whole state. No, fix the life for the people that elected you.
Yeah, you know, and I was going to say about Roger, you know, he took care of his people. But one thing about him, he took care of people all over. I can remember when Goodyear Tire Company here in Gaston was getting ready to shut the doors, and we needed an incentive from the state. And one of the first senators who came on board with our senator was Roger Bedford to help us allocate $50 million of training for the new radio tire plant. And, you know, had it not been for Roger Bedford coming on board and convincing other senators how important it was to keep these jobs in Alabama, you know, because, he was the type of guy who, like I said, took care of his district, but he took care of people around the state too. And that's what you need in any elected official's position. Your first thing is to take care of the folks who elected you and then make sure that they're okay. And then if you can help out and assist any place else, then that's what you do.
Yeah, that's what you do. That's what you do. And
but I was hoping that, like you said, I was hoping Roger would get in the race. I spoke up in Russellville back during Black History Month, and Roger came by and I talked to him briefly and I kind of pushed him a little bit to see if he was going to run, but I never did get back with him, and I hate I didn't get back with him, but it's obviously he chose not to run, but he'll be back. I'm sure he'll be back and do something.
Yeah, we need him. We need him back in the fight. And more recently down there, what do you think about the Capri Theater down there in Montgomery refusing to show the Don Siegelman documentary?
Well, you would refuse to show that you did something wrong.
She's sitting up there on that Capri board.
Yeah, but you, if you had the power to stop them from showing you did something wrong, you would stop it. I mean, you know, it's real interesting, though, but because I think they had already set up everything, and then all of a sudden when they found out, and I think when they reviewed the film, then the documentary, then they realized, well, wait a minute, this is making me look bad. So she said, no, y'all can't do that. But that's okay. You know, the truth will come to light no matter what. So
She said it showed her, and the reason why they did it is they said that she had complained that it showed her in a negative light. But some of the people to do with the film, and I think it might have been Chip Hill and some other people, was like, then why don't she sue? You know, if she should sue, then, you know, they've been encouraging her to sue, you know. But she's running for attorney general, and I haven't heard of any Democrats. Do you know of any Democrats running? I know there's a Facebook page that says, and I like them, I'm trying to follow them, and I'm really not seeing nothing out of them, but the Alabama Democratic Attorney General's Association. Do we have somebody up out of there that can that's going to put up a fight? Because if you think what the shenanigans Laura Canary pulled on Don Siegelman, what do you think she's going to do when she come back around again? We're already weakened as a party because of what happened to Don Siegelman. I mean, when they railroaded him and then everybody took their tails and ran, we've been weak ever since. If Laura Canary gets back in there, she's going to try to put the death nail into the coffin. We need a viable candidate for attorney general. But I think as this film gets around, you know, more and more people, I even seen Alabama AL.com say some negative things about her. People are waking up to all the corruption she was involved in, but we still need to be aware and put up somebody. She gets back in there, it's going to be more political motivated prosecution.
Well, you know, I think based on some of the information I've been getting, they're going to tie her to a number of things that are going on in Washington too. So I think by the time the election come around next year, she's going to be damaged good. So I'm like,
yeah,
you,
maybe somebody will take care of her, and they'll take care of her crap in the primary.
Well, that would be good. Again, like I say, I know she and her husband both are tied up with the crowd in Washington and with some of the shenanigans that are going on up there. So it's going to be interesting. I know her name has come up once or twice in talking to some of the people in Washington. But I think she's going to be okay as far as getting rid of her. I mean, we're going to be okay for getting rid of her. But again, yeah, we don't have anybody on the Democratic side that I'm aware of at this point in time. And that brings to a conversation.
Yeah.
I think the Democratic Party will be ill-advised if they don't put a candidate in every race in this state.
They need to, and they haven't for a long time. Like we've said on this show before, one of the worst things I've seen was this last election. That was the emptiest ballot I have seen. And I'm 47, and I've been voting ever since I was old enough. But that is the emptiest ballot that I have ever seen in my voting life. It was pitiful. It was pathetic. I know we can do better.
I'm 69, and I agree with you.
I don't care if they get blowed out. We need somebody up there. We need to put up a fight. And a lot of this, some of this stuff stems from our Democratic leaders. I don't even like to call their names no more when I'm live on the radio. You know, I talk about them. I call their names on Facebook, social media. But on my radio, I'm not even going to give them the pleasure of calling their names again. But a lot of them will not help a candidate that's in an area where they know they don't have full support. If you got an area of African Americans who do not necessarily go along with that leadership crowd, they're not gonna pour any money into that campaign. They're gonna offer you little to no support. You know,
they're gonna send
intermediaries to tell you that you need to go talk to Joe Reed.
Well,
no, he needs to go out and talk to the candidates. He should be the ones talking up candidates, like you was talking to Roger Bedford. Hell, that's his job. I'm glad you did it, but that's his job. So
I agree with you 100%.
Stop this foolishness. It's getting ridiculous.
We had an opportunity to create a majority minority district in our area, including Gaston and Etowah County. And because of some deals that were cut through the Democratic leadership, they cut us out of the loop because there was one state representative here who at that time was serving on the on the reapportionment committee when they got ready to redistrict. And it would have taken a lot of the black Democrats out of his district. And, of course, he didn't want to go along with that, but he told Joe and the rest of the people down in Montgomery at that time that if they went along with him, he wouldn't, with what he drew up, that he wouldn't object to their plan. And so, you know, again,
I was just saying, there we go again, selling our people out for our own political aspirations.
Absolutely. And the same thing happened in with the deal in Huntsville there. You know, why would you give up a district in Birmingham just to create a district in Huntsville? Why don't you keep the district in Birmingham and still create the district in Huntsville? I mean, it's crazy. They say that we don't like voters.
You know that. They're not going to let you get too much now.
Well, but when you go and talk to the opposite folks, they say about, well, we don't like quotas and we don't like percentages and stuff, but yet and still, when it comes down to statewide offices, they say, well, black folks is 25% of the population, so that's the only, you can only have 25% of the office holders. And that's a bunch of bull.
Yeah, it's a bunch of bull, because if you want to go back to it, why are we 25%? Because you done killed us off and you done separated us. You know, you done segregated. First, you segregated yourselves from us, and then you've been doing a master plan where you're segregating us from each other.
And not only that, but in my company, we do a lot of redistricting or doing drawing up plans for different municipalities around this state, and of course around the Southeast right now. We're doing a lot of redistricting, and what we found that not only do they do that, but they also lowball us as far as our population, and then sometimes, of course, we're behind it because, you know, Mom and them don't want you to know that Uncle Joe is staying in our house and he gets a check, so we ain't going to report him. But but again, you know, they're the ones who are keeping us at 25%. I can remember for years and years and years we've been 25% of the population, and that's just like ain't nobody dying and ain't nobody being born, so the numbers ain't moving. That's a bunch of bull.
Yeah, you're in a time warp.
Well, I did the same thing here in Gadsden, of course. For years and years, we were only 20-some percent of the population. But now we're a majority black council. And according to them, we're still not over 50% of the population. We're like 30-some percent of the population, but we got 4 majority black districts out of 7. Now, you go figure that one.
Uh-huh. Sounds like to me we need down there in Gadsden, we need some African Americans to really, you know, come out with a more accurate number, and maybe that's being controlled and dictated, you know, by the state. Maybe we need some of our state representatives to correct that.
Well, again, you know, when, you know, I drew the original district lines back in 1986 when we went to a mayor council form of government, and you know, I've been monitoring that ever since 1986. And, you know, common sense, well, of course, we've lost population since then, but at the same time, I think the 2010 census had us at 37 or 38% black. And then they had another 4 or 5% minorities. And they said that the white population, I think, was 57% of the city. And you know, again, that's in 2010. But in 2014, we were able to elect 4 black council members out of 7, and we have 4 majority black districts. Again, those numbers just don't jive. And, of course, one of the other districts that where there is a white representative now is probably close to 50-50 when it comes down to minorities. So, again, they tell us this, and that's our slavery for the 21st century, is our minds. They tell you that you're not a large portion. They tell you you're not this. They tell you not that. But if you'll go out there and look and count, and I think Huntsville is a prime example. For a long time, you only had one black council member for a long time, and then they finally realized that we got a district over here that I believe it's a majority black district, and we can elect a black person, and now you got one.
Yeah, we got two now. We had a new one come on board, which brings me to – let me get your idea on this, which brings me to something hot and heavy going on right now in Huntsville. You may have read one of my posts or something that I put up, but we have a young black woman that she's well-qualified. She's a judge. She's, as a matter of fact, her name is Judge Sybil Cleveland. She is over – the State Association of Judges. Okay, we had the presiding judge to retire, and on his way out the door, she was receiving accolades before he retired, all the way up until right around the same time he retired, she was receiving accolades. But he recommended her on the way out the door. But we got Mayor Tommy Battle, who refuses to appoint her, and he's looking outside places to appoint a judge. Now, the question is, what does the new councilman think about it? And everybody's laid out quite clearly. I put it in there. The city is operating illegally because presiding judges are oversees bonds. They set bonds. They oversee the money from the bonds. So if you don't have a presiding judge, who's overseeing the bonds? Are bonds legal? Huntsville is operating as an illegal city. And I'm just wondering, why is he judge shopping? Why does the mayor need his own personal judge? I know a lot of people out there in Huntsville are asking a lot of questions. You know, they're saying, well, what is it about him? Does he dislike black people, or does he dislike women, or does he dislike both? And she's just a double whammy, powerful black person that he does not want to see offend. So I don't know all about that. I'll leave that up to other people because I don't know Tommy Battle's heart. But his actions look shady as all get out. But I'm really asking a question. What is him appointing his own judge going to do for him? I mean, is it the $7 million fund that the presiding judge oversees? I don't know. But we're working on it, trying to get to the bottom of it.
Well,
what's his reason for overlooking this, you know, well-qualified African-American minority, black and a woman?
Plain and simple, he's looking to run for a statewide office, and he don't want that on his record.
Exactly. That was number two. That was number two on my mind. I'm glad you said it, but let me tell you what number one was in my mind. Yeah, I had said that too, but number one I had said on my mind was that maybe if he gets the right judge, maybe some of that $7 million go down two separate rabbit holes, one into the judge's pocket and the other one into their campaign somewhere. That's what I'm saying, but I got a political mind, you know. I just think like that. But it very well could be, like you said, he do not want to try to run for an Alabama governorship, and you done elevated this black woman in the judicial system.
Absolutely.
So I believe that was heavy on him, too.
It's all about perception out there with those guys. Those guys, you know, they read the tea leaves, and that would be a bad move on his part. You know, because they'll use it against him. I mean, they will hammer him to death, and when they go back into the backwoods, they won't do a lot of it on TV or news media or radio. But when they go in the backwoods and start talking, I guarantee you they would hammer him to death with the fact that not only he appointed a black, but that was a female. You have a lot of people in Alabama right now who have issues with females being in office, in certain office. And I guarantee you, Kay Ivey, if she decides to run, which I think she probably will, she's going to have a hard time being governor, I can promise you.
Yeah, she's going to have a hard time being governor. But I believe she, if she gets in it, she may could win it on the Republican side, because how they going to attack her? But who knows? These same people elected Trump. But you go back. Yeah.
That's how they're going to attack her, and that's how she's going to lose.
Yeah. You also got to keep in mind, though, when Kay Ivey got sworn in, her first road trip was to Huntsville to meet Tommy Battle. Now, Huntsville is just a growing city. He just happens to be the mayor at this point in time in history. But everything's been booming for a while, and it's been steadily picking up. And that's going to keep going no matter who's the mayor. But she came to Huntsville to meet him. I thought that was kind of telling, you know.
Yeah. Again, like I said, you know, she's a smart politician, and of course, when she started out way back in the day to public office, being a Democrat and everything. But Kay got some problems out there. The only reason she became lieutenant governor was because of the fact that she was on the Republican ticket. But I think the buck is going to stop at that point.
Yeah,
I just don't.
Not only that, I had former Alabama Senator Pro Tem, President Lord Barron, I had him on the show, and we were talking about the leadership crisis in Alabama. And he said Kay Ivey is the worst politician he have ever seen in his life. And he said on the show, I don't know, you know, but he was like, she's an alcoholic. You know, he said everybody around her knows she's got a problem. That's what he said. So he was like, she would be the absolutely worst. He had hoped that Bentley would stay in there because he said Ivy was so bad.
Well,
and he said this is something that's known around in Montgomery.
Well, one thing she did do when she got there, she started draining the swamp there too. So,
yeah, I like what she did about, you know, trying to return some of these voting rights. That was a good move, and that's just being common sense with history. I mean, all this stuff with Jeff Sessions and his crap supporters like Sue Bell Cobb and the Democratic primary, all this kind of stuff about stopping people from voting, man, that's the worst. That's the worst. We need to stop that.
That's one of the things that we need to focus in on now that we have an opportunity to put a number of people back on the voting roll and make sure that we get those people out to vote. I can remember back in 2002 when I ran for mayor of the city. You know, our city elections is along with the state elections. We'll have city elections next year. And the primary that year was in June, and from June to August in the city of Gadsden, they took 2,000 people off the voting roll.
Wow.
2,000 people, a little over 2,000. I think it was around 2,200 people they took off the voting roll. And the majority of those were black folk who, at that time, they identified as felons. And there were several hundred folks I know who went to the polls who had voted in June, but their name was not on the list in August. And so we've got to go back out there and target those individuals and get those individuals back on the voting rolls, make sure we get them signed up and make sure we follow up to get them to go to the polls and vote. It's going to be very, very important in next year's state election. And it's going to also be very, very important in our city for our city elections.
Yeah. What happened to this summer Democratic revival that those leaders were talking about? It's almost fall. I haven't seen no revival.
Well, I agree with you. I'm not sure what the revival is.
Yeah, they were talking about I wanted to go to the revival too, because I'm telling you, I'm a Democrat, man. I might be hard sometimes, but I am a Democrat. I'm still claiming it for a little while, even though the kind of leaders we got, people like that, and some of the apathy in the black community, it eats away at me. But I'm gonna keep on going. But these two leaders we got, man, that was pitiful for them to say that. And that's why I'm glad I put it out there early on. Like I said, the leaders in the Democratic Party have not done nothing but blow a lot of smoke. We have not seen no revival as promised. The tent hasn't even been pitched yet. But the only Democratic revival that's going to happen, it's not going to happen until Dan Sigmund can get back in the game, because that was the point when everybody took their tails and ran.
You know, I hadn't thought about that until you mentioned that, but you're absolutely correct. That took a lot out of the Democratic Party in the state of Alabama.
Yeah, and I can't say that I understand them, but I'll say, you know, in a certain way, why I can say that, and I can't say that. I can say I understand it because we got to think about it. Look how Karl Rove and company, along with Laura Canary, look how they had flipped the Alabama judicial system. We had all those Democrats sitting up there on the Alabama Supreme Court, and Karl Rove didn't come in and wiped it out. Now, you come in and you get these attorneys like Laura Canary, and you get these corrupt judges or these closed-mouth people like Subel Clark sitting on the bench. You look like you facing all of that. That made, you know, a lot of them just didn't have the metal for it. You know what I'm saying? And they faded back into the darkness, or they flipped in on the other side. They just didn't want to come up against that because if they can do it to a governor, a former governor, and a man as powerful as Don Siegelman, a lot of them felt like, what chance did they have? But I still say they should have fought, you know, the whole time he was there. They should have fought. It should have been a rallying cry. We could have been using that to have this party united and behind the common cause. Even these ill-fated leaders we got right now in office, they could have used that to reinvigorate the party, and that could have brought the party together. That could have brought the party together under that one cause to, you know, get justice for the person who led us. But they failed to do that.
Well, you know, the thing that disturbed me about that whole situation is what they actually convicted him of. Every elected official, and I want to repeat it again, I want people to understand, every elected official in Alabama, throughout this country, could be charged with that same crime and, of course, be found guilty. Think about it. The quid pro quo was the fact that Scrooge gave money to the campaign and he appointed him to a board. How many city council members, mayors, state representatives, state senators, governors, and presidents have appointed their friends who have donated to a campaign?
Yeah.
Every last one. And so if you're going to base it on that, and that's all they had, was the fact that they say he gave money to this campaign and he promised to appoint him to a board. Well,
he had already previously been appointed to by a Republican and a Democratic governor.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, that's what I'm trying to tell you. That's why those guys tucked their tails and they ran, because everybody was guilty of what he just done, both Republicans and Democrats. But you got to stand there and fight. I mean, because that was crazy.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
And that's why I reached out to the Reporter Monthly. We talked last night. We're going to try to get the Don Siegelman documentary screened in Gaston. I think she may have a venue that we can do that. But somebody put together that venue and make sure we got a projector. And we're trying to bring that to Gaston ASAP. We're working on August the 18th for the a Decatur screening, and August 19th for a Huntsville screening.
So okay, great.
We still should be trying to advertise that here real soon. But like we said, man, they tucked their tails and they ran. But after that Supreme Court got flipped, like you said, they had all the power. They had all the power. Like they had Bill Pryor sitting where he's sitting. The Don Siegelman had to go through his course. They had an obstacle all the way through the justice system to keep Don Siegelman in prison. And if you can't rally behind that, you know, I just don't know. And think about Subel Clark, who's now in the Democratic primary. She was a federal judge. She wasn't even a part of none of those 118 current and former attorney generals. She didn't even lend her signature. She was the highest, most powerful person. She was sitting on the judiciary, Democrat that we had. Think about it. Did you see her out there really championing the injustice from Don Siegelman? After all these briefs went to the Supreme Court by everybody, even former White House lawyers filing briefs on his behalf. Subel Clark sitting up there in the judiciary being buddy-buddy with Jeff Sessions.
Well,
she needs to get out of the race. She's looking ridiculous.
Well, I think it's a waste of time and effort and money on her part, but you know, we'll see. Again, I just think that any elected official, period, both, like I say, Republican and Democrat, should have rallied behind Siegelman on that crazy trumped up charge, because again, at any given time, if they want you, they can go after you. Because that everybody, when you get to be a public official and you appoint people to boards and what have you, quite naturally you appoint your friends, people who supported you. And based on what they convicted him of, that's what they convicted him of, appointing somebody who had supported him in the past.
That's look at Nikki Haley up there as the ambassador to the UN.
Absolutely. Prime example.
Yeah.
Prime example. And then I don't know where we're going to go and how we're going to right this ship in Alabama, but somehow or another, we've got to understand that the Republican Party in this state and the Republican Party in around the country mostly are not in favor of helping people of need, or people who look like me and who need assistance like some of us. And people who, like, when I say need assistance, I'm talking about both black and white. And all they favor is the people with money. And I can't, for the life of me, I can't understand how some of the people out there in the rural areas can identify with being a Republican when all they do is cut programs. They cut farming subsidies. They're cutting all kind of subsidies away from people. And particularly now that they're getting into this medical thing and Social Security, but not Social Security per se, but Medicare and Medicaid, I can't understand for the life of me how these people can still say, I'm a Republican. And I think the key thing here is, and it's a religious thing, and that's what scares me when those guys came on board and said that the GOP was the party of God, and these folks fell for it hook, line, and sinker. And you got all these Republicans out there doing all this crazy stuff, and at the same time, they're taken away from people of need. But those people of need, eyes are glued on the fact that, I'm opposed to abortion, and the Democrats are heathens, and they do this. The Democrats are opposed to abortion. What they in favor of a woman having the right to make a decision, and that's a totally different issue. I don't think everybody. I'm personally, I'm opposed to abortion, but I'm also opposed to me trying to tell a woman what to do with her body.
Yeah, I say that all the time because what I say, what we need to do is get back to equal partners in conception. We're skipping steps here. You know, you can't tell a woman what to do with her body, but a woman did not create that child all by herself. But she can destroy that child all by herself, and that is not right. Just because
I agree with
body.
That.
It is her biological assignment given to her by the Creator that if you have sex, you're the one, you know, in His design who has to carry this. You shouldn't get any special privileges to stop the life if you want to by yourself. What about the co-creator? They have nothing to do. So if you had something like that, that would stop a whole lot of this child support stuff and all this other craziness, because if a woman don't want to have a child, she would have to tell who the father is, and if he wants a child, she'd have to carry the term, but he should never be able to get any state assistance or take her to court for any money. That will solve all that. We'll stop all these these pregnancies and stuff, and you know, we just need to stop doing that, you know, because back in the day, and we're about to get, we're going to talk, this thing is about to cut off, but you got to come back on because I want to talk to you about Social Security and Medicare. But back in the day, when I'm telling you how they did it racially, white women did not have to give up the farm or put the man out to get the farm subsidies. But black women had to put the black man